with the current belief about fossil fuels permeating Washington, it's not good for a resource-dependent state like Alaska.
Debating the future of oil. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the decision in the Fairbanks 4 case now rests with the judge.
This court is not writing on a blank slate. It's writing on the history of 4 cases.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Alaska Pacific University is accepting applications for all undergraduate programs for the spring 2016 semester. More at AlaskaPacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
For Veterans Day, we've drawn a statistical sketch of Alaska veterans using figures from the Census Bureau. As you may have heard, Alaska has the highest rate of veterans in the nation, not the most vets. Our 70,000 is a drop in the bucket compared to bigger states with more retirees like California and Florida. But nearly 14% of Alaska adults have served in the military, far higher than the national rate, hovering just under 8%. Our vets are also younger, more than half served since the first Gulf War. Alaska veterans earn more than vets in other states. The median income for Alaska vets is about $51,000. That's higher than the national median vet income of about $37,000. And the unemployment rate among Alaska vets is lower than among vets nationwide. Though veterans make up a disproportionately high share of Americans experiencing homelessness, Alaska has one of the lowest rates of veteran homelessness in the nation. State policies have cut the number of homeless vets by about two-thirds in recent years. Authorities have arrested Aaron Fidolfi, the former Bethel police officer who was on the run. Officials arrested Fidolfi last evening in Anchorage. He was arraigned in the city this afternoon. He'll be taken back to Bethel for future court appearances. Fidolfi is charged with attempted third-degree sexual assault and third-degree official misconduct. Both of these are classified as Class A misdemeanors, which can carry a one-year jail sentence and up to $10,000 fines. In early September, Fidolfi reportedly picked up an intoxicated woman while on patrol in Bethel and took her near the city's dog pound. The woman was able to get away and notified Alaska state troopers. Fidolfi at first denied the claims against him, but later changed his story after authorities were able to obtain video from a local pizzeria that showed Fidolfi picking up the woman. Fidolfi was later placed on administrative leave. It was during this time that he quit in early October. He had worked for BPD for about 2.5 years. The Fairbanks 4 exoneration case is in the hands of Superior Court Judge Paul Lyle. Closing arguments were heard Tuesday in a 5-week hearing to consider innocence declaration requests by George Freese, Kevin Pease, Marvin Roberts, and Eugene Vent, the four Native men convicted of the 1997 murder of John Hartman. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, with no physical evidence in the case, attorneys focused on overlaying puzzles of testimony by dozens of witnesses, including two potential alternative Hartman murder suspects.
William Holmes and Jason Wallace are already imprisoned for 2002 drug killings, but both also have alleged involvement in the John Hartman murder that the Fairbanks Four were convicted of. Fairbanks Four attorney Bob Bundy maintains that the Hartman attack secret contributed to Wallace and Holmes' future collaboration on cocaine ring killings.
Holmes trusted Wallace to carry out his murderous plot to kill their competition in the cocaine business. I don't suppose there's a reason for that other than he knew that Wallace would keep his mouth shut and that Wallace was capable of brutality on that scale.
Both men were caught, and Wallace helped convict Holmes. Testifying at the Fairbanks 4 hearing with state-granted immunity, Wallace denied past incriminating statements allegedly made to a public defender agency investigator about the Hartman murder. Holmes testified about driving the car that carried Hartman's attackers, including Wallace, who he identifies as the main aggressor. He did not claim to witness the beating, something Fairbanks 4 attorney Kate Demarest made note of.
A false story invented for purposes of revenge would look very different than the story Bill Holmes told this court. The false story would more clearly implicate Jason Wallace, likely making Holmes a direct eyewitness, rather than relying on the hearsay statements of others while Mr. Holmes waited in the car.
State Attorney Adrian Bachman characterized Wallace and Holmes' statements as attempts at score settling or legal leveraging in their drug killings. She conversely presented recanted confessions made by Fairbanks 4 members George Fries and Eugene Vent as far more believable.
You have two confessions that were made contemporaneous to the events involved in the killing of John Hartman. They were confessions made against the better interests of the people making the confessions, and there was no identifiable ulterior motive in making those confessions.
Bachman pointed to Fairbanks 4 evidence presented at the hearing, like described retooled testimony from alibi witnesses, as revisionist history.
We all understand what the agenda is here. The agenda is to somehow undermine the court's confidence that due process was served in the four trials, the three trials in which 36 jurors deliberated and came to unanimous verdicts based on the highest standard of proof in the land.
The standard of justice Judge Paul Lyle must apply in considering the Fairbanks 4 post-conviction relief requests is less than the beyond a reasonable doubt benchmark by which the men were convicted. Judge Lyle told the courtroom, PCRs require clear and convincing evidence.
If I find that the evidence has met that standard, then I have to determine what the result is. Is there a new trial? Or is there release?
George Fries, Kevin Pease, and Eugene Vent remain in prison. Marvin Roberts is on parole. Judge Lyle said the focus is on new evidence that fits admissibility rules, but also cautioned that he has thousands of transcript pages from previous cases to read before taking the current PCR under advisement.
This court is not writing on a blank slate. It's writing on the history of four cases. That's why I have to read those transcripts. So it's going to take a long time, and it's going to be a painstaking process.
Judge Lyle says he hopes to finish reading transcripts by the end of January, at which time a six-month clock allotted for a ruling will begin. Lyle added he may exceed the deadline. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The International Energy Agency is predicting the return of higher oil prices, but not soon enough to end the gut punch to Alaska's budget.
We think that the market will gradually recover, and we see about $80 oil price around 2020 to balance the markets.
That's Fatih Birol, executive director of the Paris-based organization, explaining one of the key findings in the group's World Energy Outlook. Alaska North Slope crude has been selling for about $48 a barrel for months. This week, the West Coast spot price fell below $46. So $80 sounds like an improvement. Around that price, Alaska's effective tax rate on oil production begins to climb. But another popular belief has it that $50 oil is the new normal. And Birol says he can't rule it out. If fracking for oil in the lower 48 became cheaper, and if new stability in the Middle East allowed countries like Iraq to step up production, Birol says prices could remain low for years to come. But those are big ifs.
We think our World Energy Outlook highlights that a $50 world 10 years or so is rather unlikely.
One of the big stories in the World Energy Outlook this year is the rapid growth of renewable sources of power generation, including wind and solar. Birol says 60 cents of every dollar invested in power now goes to renewables.
Renewables are not anymore a niche fuel. Renewables became a mainstream fuel as of now.
Charles Ebinger, an energy expert at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C., said this week that demand for oil worldwide will grow by as much as 19 million barrels a day in the coming decades. But Ebinger says he sees no bright spot for Alaska's oil and gas future due to both market economics and the policies of the Obama administration, which Ebinger says are focused on climate change.
I think Alaska's in big trouble. And I hate to say that because I love Alaska and I have a lot of friends there, but I think with the current belief about fossil fuels permeating Washington, it's not good for a resource-dependent state like Alaska.
Alaskans can't realistically expect oil prices to save the day either. At recent production levels, the price would have to be well over $100 a barrel to balance the state budget. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage officials beef up efforts to stop the drug spice.
The goal in this, bottom line, is to find out, identify those individuals who are distributing and or manufacturing and putting a stop at the source.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the University of Alaska Southeast, with schools of arts and sciences, management, education, and career education in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka. UAS, a learning community on campus and online. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
The Anchorage Assembly passed a measure giving law enforcement more options to combat the synthetic drug spice. First responders and city officials have called the months-long outbreak unsustainable. But as KSKA's Zechariah Hughes reports, no one believes the new ordinance is a silver bullet.
For all the attention that it gets, there's not a lot of agreement about spice in Anchorage. Basic questions like where it's coming from, how to classify it legally, and the health impacts, those are all still being figured out. Two things everyone does agree on are that spice is a really bad problem and that something needs to be done.
My son had passed away from spice.
Lynette Marino-Hintz testified about the drug's personal toll wearing a Batman shirt to commemorate her late son, who loved the nocturnal crime fighter. She supports the new ordinance.
I think it's a step in the right direction. There'll be people that will say that it's not, but if you don't do anything, then it just continues. So I think that this is moving us closer to a better solution.
Anchorage already had a measure to combat spice, passed in 2014 to stop over-the-counter sales. This new one updates the legal mechanisms for charging and prosecuting it. Police Chief Chris Tolley says his officers will now have discretion in terms of who they arrest, but that the real point is building larger cases rather than just going after street-level users.
But the goal in this, bottom line, is to find out, identify those individuals who are distributing and or manufacturing and putting a stop at the source.
There is a whole set of problems related to spice because of all the unknowns that surround it. As municipal prosecutor Seneca Thino told the Assembly, right now there's not so much known about, for example, the supply route, only rumors about spice being ordered online and shipped to Anchorage through the mail. She says this measure gives law enforcement tools to build up exactly that kind of information.
But the police department, in conjunction with the feds, have not been able to fully develop a good investigation into where this is coming from.
But nobody thinks this ordinance is the main solution for Anchorage's spice problem. The critiques and recommendations, they're all over the place. Some say it's a miniature financial crisis for the city's emergency response system. Others say the real cost is the human suffering embedded within mental health and addiction issues on the street. Assemblymember Amy Domboski supports the measure, but says she and other taxpayers are tired of footing the bill without enough accountability being required. She faults a lack of responsibility among users and from Beans Cafe and the Brother Francis shelter in the area where the majority of emergency calls come from.
We would not tolerate this from a bar owner who was dealing heroin in their parking lot. Why the heck are we dealing? Why are we giving them a pass? It's not acceptable.
Testimony was overwhelmingly in favor of the measure, and Assembly comments were supportive ahead of a unanimous yes vote. But amid the agreement, a note of caution came from Catherine Muntean, who works at a downtown cafe and says she's meeting more and more emergency responders as the spice issue continues to spread.
Thank you for the start. This is really necessary. I am really tired of dealing with spice because it is a daily thing.
AO 123 officially means the municipality now treats making, selling, and possessing spice as misdemeanors, bringing up to a $10,000 fine or as much as a year in jail. Only state law can set felony offenses. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
A new aircraft mechanic school is coming to Bethel. The program's main goal is to cater to the region's needs and create jobs that will help make that possible. Everything for the program, from the fleet of bush planes to the exams, are ready. All that's needed is a full classroom. KYUK's Lakeed Rashavis reports.
The Aviation Maintenance School's approximately 700-square-foot hangar is filled with ready-to-go toolboxes, old plane engines, and an electrical switchboard. There are also pilot cabinet gauges, air pressure simulators, and two bush planes. If this sounds like a lot, well, it is. This hangar is meant to prepare the 15 students entering the Regional Aviation Maintenance School for real-world success. Aviation mechanics help ensure the planes are functioning properly and up to code. The people checking the plane before takeoff, that's them. Jeff Hoffman is the school's manager, and he's been spearheading this project for more than half a decade.
Our brochures just says coming soon, and we've been yelling that cry for at least 3.5 years now.
Now that the program is ready to go next February, Hoffman says the goal is to fill seats.
The need for aviation mechanics and pilots that are from the region that want to live here is far and few.
That's where the school comes in. Since the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta is off the road system, planes are highly relied upon not just for travel, but for medical emergencies. The application itself is 2 pages. Students who qualify for financial aid and other scholarships can use it to pay for the school fee, which is $40,000. The fee pays for the course, textbooks, transportation, and dormitories. The dorms themselves were built using sustainable resources and technology, and will test how well these types of materials work in the region's climate. After prospective students submit their application, they'll undergo a brief interview. If successful in the program, students will enter a field where the average salary is about $60,000 in Alaska. The program lasts 18 months, and classes are expected to run about 6 hours each day. Although there aren't extended holidays, the program accommodates subsistence lifestyles.
We have dedicated time off for the school during the springtime when the fish and the geese come back, as well as fall time moose hunting. I know that if we did not do this, we would lose a majority of our students.
Hoffman says he hopes the program will benefit young adults looking for a career in aviation. Above the hangar is a small classroom with dozens of textbooks, reference binders, and a small set of computers. Ken Wallace is the course instructor, and he says he's just putting the finishing touches on the curriculum. He says if students work hard, there shouldn't be a problem.
I just don't see that any student who wants to learn and is applying themselves that they can't do it. You know, we're not out to fail students. Our goal is to have the students pass our program.
The equipment the students will work on has either been designed specifically for the course or has been decommissioned, like some of the engines or even Wallace's own plane.
So if they come here and want to go down to Grant Aviation and work for them, they'll be working on the same model airplanes that they learned on here.
The school began accepting applications late last week. As of Monday, 5 potential students have applied. In Bethel, I'm Lakeed Rashavis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news about Alaska businesses and industries for over 30 years. News, information, and subscriptions are available online at akbizmag.com.
A powerful windstorm blew through Unalaska today, closing schools and causing minor damage. Meteorologist David Kosovar at the National Weather Service in Anchorage said his agency clocked wind speeds of 91 miles per hour at the Dutch Harbor Airport around 6:30 a.m. A 93-mile-per-hour wind gust hit the Accutan Airport around the same time. Sustained gusts blew more than 70 miles an hour on Captain's Bay throughout Tuesday night. Unalaska Deputy Police Chief Mike Holman says the public safety office responded to calls about windows breaking, a shipping container flung across a roadway, and a streetlight that blew down near the South Channel Bridge. According to the Alaska Measures of Progress test results, less than half of Alaskan students meet educational standards. But distress over those numbers is just one part of AMP's troubles. Reporting delays and issues with the test format have some superintendents and lawmakers calling for an end to the new annual. And as KDLG's Hannah Colton reports, the state's Department of Education isn't happy either.
On Monday, Alaska Education Commissioner Mike Hanley framed the less-than-stellar AMP scores as a helpful new baseline that raises the bar for Alaska students. But when asked about the way the test was administered, his answer was not so rosy.
I'm not happy. I'm not satisfied with the way the data was rolled out.
The state has a five-year, $25 million contract with the Kansas-based Achievement and Assessment Institute, or AAI, to develop and score the new AMP tests. Reporting glitches caused weeks of delays in getting scores out this fall. AAI said recently that some of the problems are related to Alaska-specific challenges and the switch from pencil to online, and that they should have been better prepared. But from Hanley's end, the delays have added to an overall lack of confidence in AMP.
You know, after going through the process, you pick the vendor you think is going to work the best. We have to look and see if that's still the case. Is this the best vendor for us? And how do we move forward?
The technical glitches are one thing, but other concerns are being raised as well. In October, a group of 20 district superintendents wrote a letter to the State Board of Education questioning the usefulness of the test itself.
The test results don't tell us enough to work with students.
Dillingham Superintendent Danny Frazier was one of the 20 who signed. Frazier says the AMP results don't give teachers detailed enough information about their students' learning.
Say that a child was having difficulty in reading. Well, where are they having difficulty in reading? And this test doesn't tell us. Is it the comprehension? Is it word recall? Is it phonics? Is it more phonics? We're just unable to tell from the results of this test how we could remediate a student and help them learn better.
Frazier says another letter is in the works, in which he believes superintendents will call for abandoning this test altogether. If so, that will be in line with a bill Palmer Republican Representative Jim Culver says he's drafting, calling for the repeal of AMP.
In other words, quit doing this. It's too expensive. We're not getting good results. We don't get usable data. And it's burning up a lot of instruction time and a lot of administrative expenses for little value. Because all we've done is said to our districts that more than half of them are doing a good job. And how does that empower and how does that move us forward?
Culver says he'd like to see AMP replaced with a nationally standardized test, such as the MAP test currently being used in some districts as a benchmarking tool. Commissioner Hanley says making changes isn't so easy.
I'm not sold on this vendor. I'm not sold on having one test for everybody. But we do have to follow the laws that are in place.
Annual testing is required by law. If the state were to shop for a new vendor, working through the procurement process could leave Alaska schools without a test next year. That would be complicated, says Hanley.
Federally, we're required to have a test. What would that mean? I'll also be talking to U.S. Department of Ed, and I've had several conversations with them about, okay, we need to make a change. We're in this tough spot. We need a waiver for a year and see if we can get that without putting any of our federal money at risk.
The easiest thing, according to Commissioner Hanley, would be to make sure AMP gets fixed. He said he plans to meet with AAI, the contractor, to discuss that soon. Separately, Hanley says he'll be meeting with some concerned superintendents next week to talk over the other options. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
A small business in Haines has taken a big step forward by opening a shop and storefront. Fairweather Ski Works moved into the Haines Brewing Company's old location in Dalton City. KHNS's Emily Files has more.
That is the sound of paper birch wood, fiberglass, epoxy resin, and other materials being pressed into skis.
Yeah, it's exciting. You want to see how it turns out.
Lindsay Johnson and Graham Kraft are the co-owners and craftsmen of Fairweather Ski Works. Here's Kraft.
We have a more resort, all-mountain-oriented ski. And then we have the sockeyes here. These are one of our backcountry skis.
The skis are handmade out of local birch and Sitka spruce trees. They're adorned with wood veneers and Alaskan artwork. Kraft started the business a couple years ago with Ian Seward. Kraft says he started making skis as a hobby about 8 years ago.
Well, at first it was just a miracle that they worked. But now it's pretty fun to have the process dialed a bit more and really take it from like the raw material from the forest, and eventually it comes out as a ski after a lot of steps in the middle, so that's pretty rewarding.
And then you get to go to the places that you love the most and look down on the forest and the ocean and all of the rest of it, and the glaciers, the vast wild.
Making a business out of handcrafted skis hasn't been easy.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride. The business side of things, mostly like the ski building side of things, is I've been doing that for a lot longer than I've been doing any kind of business.
Fairweather Ski Works was selected as one of two winners for the 2014 Path to Prosperity competition. The contest for entrepreneurs in Southeast Alaska is sponsored by Sea Alaska, Ha'ani, and the Nature Conservancy. The ski business, along with the Haines Distillery, won the contest at the beginning of this year.
I think the biggest thing that we got from them was the support, the emotional support, and like saying, we actually think this is a good idea. and they're all professionals, all business professionals, and for them to have some kind of faith in us, apparently a fair bit of faith, that's been pretty good.
They also got financial support, up to $40,000 in seed funding for consulting and technical assistance. Kraft and Johnson say they're using that money for a range of things, including website improvements, marketing videos, travel to a trade show in Colorado, and consulting with an engineer. But one of the most exciting things that's happened in the past year is this move.
Oh, it's just a perfect spot for it, because it's traditionally been a building where a lot of good stuff has been made, so.
The Haines Brewery operated in this Dalton City shop at the fairgrounds for about 16 years. It moved to a new location on Main Street in September. Kraft and Johnson hope an in-town location will boost business.
There really hasn't been any point of stasis in this whole since this business started, but this feels like a big evolutionary leap to be in here and have like a dedicated ski shop.
The ski makers will continue to find their way through the business side of this. But they say what's really fulfilling is not the marketing or the numbers. It's this.
To be able to go skiing on something that's like made out of the place you're walking through, you're skiing through, you know, like this wood looks really good on the snow.
Fairweather Ski Works will be open through the winter and on cruise ship days during the summer. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Lakeed Rashavis in Bethel, Zachariah Hughes and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Hannah Colton in Dillingham, Greta Mart in Unalaska, and Emily Files in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Monica Goki is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Celebrate National Philanthropy Day in Alaska and honor outstanding small businesses like Two Friends Gallery for their work to make Alaska a better place to live and raise Alaskan families. Join the celebration on Friday, November 20th at the Denina Center. Visit afpalaska.net. This message sponsored by Alaska Public Media and AFP Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.